Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome today to this episode of New Cyber Frontier. And we're talking today with somebody who works with the Air Force on a global positioning system, GPS. We have Professor Andre Hinton, who is also a professor at Colorado Technical University. And I don't know how he does it all, but he's going to talk today.
I don't really know either.
About risk management framework. This was a very interesting conversation that we had. And I said, you know, this is something that people need to see and hear about what the future looks like for developing systems and what you need for working with the government Air Force. If you're going to make a system, and imagine at some point this is going to go into everywhere and even in the civilian world.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Risk. Good here.
Yeah.
So,
eventually it's going to go into everywhere, civilian world, everything.
Yeah.
But give us a background on yourself. How did you get where you're at? What your life's about? If you want to give us personal, we're good. We like that. And then we'll get into the risk management framework and what that's about.
Okay. Yeah. So, I can go all the way back to when I first got introduced to computers back in the early, I don't want to go 70s.
What was the first computer?
TRS-80. Trash 80. Sorry about that.
So a Trash 80.
Yes. So first computer.
Tell us something about your first computer that right. Nobody would believe now.
So that first computer, let's see. First of all, it was my mom's and dad's TV that actually worked as my monitor. So when they came in to watch TV, of course, I had a very monochrome screen going on. And I was probably the only one in the entire, they're running a lot of them even in the city that I lived in, let alone my neighborhood. I had the only computer in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So people would come by and come check it out and say, okay, so this is a computer.
Did they want to know anything about it or just see it to say, that's a computer?
Just want to see it. Just want to say, okay, that's a computer. Don't want one. Not sure I wanted a computer, but I was fascinated with it.
Yeah.
And started really looking into programming and programming. Then it was basic, programming and basic, and doing a whole lot. I remember my first program, actually it was a visual program where you had a guy dribbling, just a stick man dribbling a basketball, and he would jump, hold the basketball up, it was a square, mm-hmm. and he would dunk in a basketball goal, and the basketball goal just exploded, right?
Explode, huh?
Yeah.
My first game was checkers.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. I loaded it from my tape drive on my VIC-20, my Commodore VIC-20.
The Commodore VIC-20.
I remember listening to that tape on my cassette player, too. Mm-hmm. Do-do-do-do-do-do. You know?
Same thing. Yeah, same thing. It was some pretty, pretty amazing times back there. But, so, you know, from that time and got into high school, and I remember my senior year, the first computer class the school offered, my senior year, I'm not going to say the year yet, but it was a long time ago.
19, don't date yourself.
Yeah, no, I still do that. But just let you know, the first computer class that high schools were offering back then, and some programming going on, a lot of Visual Basic and Structural
like
Basic.
That?
So I did, so much so that I didn't need but like three classes to graduate, right, for the year.
You know, the funny thing is I took computer programming when I was in high school. I hated it so bad I dropped out of the class.
Wow. See, I was the opposite. So I would be in my class, which was like the first period, and then I would, since I didn't have any more classes that day, mm-hmm. I would just stay in there for the next like four classes.
Yeah.
So other students would come in and I'd still be in there programming, and then the other students would come in. And so that's how
I was an underachiever in high school. I did those type of things when I got into college and the military, when it became part of my life then.
Right.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
So then I went on to junior college, Tyler Junior College, and Stephen F. Austin State University. And in the iteration of doing that, I was computer science. Mm-hmm. And so COBOL, Fortran, Pascal, all those languages back then. To graduate from that, I moved on.
And those, for most people, it was just a bunch of names.
Names, yeah.
Back in the day. So how'd you get, though, the Air Force, where you're at? Okay. Here, what you're doing there?
So once I went, I actually was, like I said, I was in Stephen F. Austin State University. Then I wound up just dropping out of college, run out of money, like some other people in those days. And I saw a commercial that says, be all you can be, so I joined the Army. And within the Army, they found out that I actually had computer experience, but even though I was going to be a medic, mm-hmm. when I got to my first duty station, the first thing they wanted me to do is help them develop a database to track all of their, you know, deployments and readiness. So I wound up doing that instead of doing my medical job. So that kind of happened. And to press forward, when I got out of the military, I didn't really go into the medical field. I continued on my computer path.
Yeah.
And wound up working for a little small company called Lockheed Martin.
Yeah. Heard of them before.
Yeah, a small company.
Yeah.
And wound up doing a lot of IT work for them, all the way from, it was more for like four hats. So I worked in development, testing, and then support and acquisitions. So I wound up doing all four gamuts at Lockheed. Went to work for L3 in cybersecurity.
When was the first time you would consider that you were working in cybersecurity and not just IT?
So it was information assurance when I first started.
Yeah. Right?
It was just IA, hey, what's this
thing? And that's kind of what we're going to talk, what year was that?
That had to be like 2003.
Okay.
Yeah. Information assurance was kind of switching, and they were talking words called cyber, but it wasn't cybersecurity yet. It was information assurance, and talked more about, you know, cyber started to come on the scene. But
And I'm not sure that, you know, now cybersecurity is just so many things that, you know, it's hard to say that it should all be called cybersecurity is what I'm thinking, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I would say the same thing now. I mean, before we had all these different names, and within the DOD, my job right now is accreditation. So there was a time when systems didn't have to be accredited to connect to a network.
Explain what that means, though.
Okay.
What does accreditation mean?
So an accreditation it does mean that you have a system, a DOD system, and by law, every Department of Defense system has to be tracked. It has to go into a system of record, and that system of record just states, you know, hey, and it gets a number that can be tracked by, and then that tells what the purpose of that system is.
I'm trying to bump the mic, maybe move it down. Okay. If you keep bumping it with your neck here, it gets pretty loud. Hopefully, you can edit all this, right?
Editing.
Yeah, we're good.
So all these systems, no matter what they do, I don't care how small, how large, you know, in our case, you know, with GPS is pretty large, but every single DOD system has to be accredited. And what that means is to connect or not to connect, it needs to go through an accreditation process. Mm-hmm. And that determines, okay, well, what are the risks? And
so there's like
what type
of information, group or a company that does this, and then that's before any system has to go on, or is this done at a product level for like every one of this so type of
single,
system out
so
there?
So every single system has to go through it, but more and so weapon systems.
Okay.
So when a DoD weapon system, I mean, there may be systems out there that may not have gone through an accreditation, but what it's actually called is an ATO, mm-hmm. an authority to operate.
Okay. So they're getting their license to operate right. in the military network, in the Absolutely. Military arena, and Absolutely. That's called accreditation.
Accreditation.
Okay, gotcha.
And that accreditation has gone through some, you know, changes. It was called DITSCAP at one time.
Yeah. Let's not get into all
right,
the acronyms.
Right. But I'm just going to go to where we are now.
Okay.
I won't talk about what the actual acronyms mean, but DITSCAP to what's called DICAP, which was just like a year ago, to now what's called Risk Management Framework, which is what we want to talk about today.
Yeah, we're going
to
talk about today.
So it went from what we call controls, which are ways that we track risk and vulnerabilities of a system. Mm-hmm. Right? Those controls are things that we say, okay, this system has this type of function, and so it actually has a set of controls that are mapped to that particular thing in the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so based on that, we take measures to harden that system based on that set of controls. Well, RMF had 110 controls, right? Just a small set of controls that manage the system.
That's a small set.
Small set.
What's a big set?
A big set is what RMF went to. It's like 2,500 controls.
Okay.
A little bit of a difference, right? So now they saw
the
need to...
individual things that have to be checked mm-hmm. to meet accreditation.
Yes.
So there's 2,200...
25.
2,500 line items they have to go through and say it has this check, has this check, has this check, has right. this check.
Well, not
before
just that,
they meet the ability, what's it called, the authority to operate, and they can put it on a network for the military.
Yes.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, so 25. So, but what happens is you have to do what's called, and within the RMF framework, you have steps. Okay. And that's the first step would be, and we'll do another podcast so I can talk more about, you know, more later. But that first step is called categorization.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so based on the categorization of the system, where it be classified, unclassified, whether it be secret or top secret.
And this is about... the data in there or the job, the operation it does, what causes it to be classified?
Yeah, the type of data you're processing.
So if it's data about, you know, my neighbor's house, it's not classified. But if it's data about a building that the government owns, it is.
Yeah, depending on what's in that building as well.
So I heard things like, and if this is something you can't answer, don't. But if there's a name of a location where something's at and a name of a project... or a code name right. together becomes classified,
yes.
or if they're
not together, then both items are unclassified.
Gotcha. So it's a combination of how it goes together, and if it meets that something that
now,
our government or our military says the average person shouldn't have this information.
The interesting thing is we talked about vulnerabilities. If you have a set amount of vulnerabilities on a system, mm-hmm. the system is vulnerable for one, and then two, and then three. So based on those set of vulnerabilities, if they're a certain amount compiled together.
What do you, vulnerability, you're using this term, I'm not sure how you're using it in context here.
Right.
Vulnerability meaning somebody can hack into that computer?
Not necessarily hack, just a weakness.
A weakness.
You can use the word vulnerability synonymous with weakness.
But
so a weakness
in
of
your
a system,
context, it's only things that are known. So a lot of weaknesses
yeah,
aren't known.
Absolutely. So we know what we know, we know what we don't know, and then sometimes in the case we don't know what we don't know is happening.
So why can't we just say, if there's anything we know that's a weakness, it can't be on there? Why do we have to have a level, or do we accept it in some way?
So a lot of systems are dated, right?
Gotcha.
And they're still working and functioning, you know, in the field with the warfighter.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just shut that system off. Update that system. For instance, like about 6 months ago, operating system, let's just say, hypothetically, a system had XP running. Well, it's not supported.
Windows XP.
It's not supported by Microsoft. Right now, in terms of getting accreditation,
mm-hmm.
the DoD says if you're running XP, you're not going to get it.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Hypothetically, a system had XP running. It's not supported.
Windows XP.
Windows XP. It's not supported by Microsoft. Right now, in terms of getting accreditation, the DoD says if you're running XP, you're not going to get it.
But some systems might have this, and I guess we don't want to talk about that.
Right.
So.
But as long as I don't say the names. But you're right. If some have it, then that's a huge vulnerability because, number one, you've got security patches that aren't supported, right? And so, you know, you're driving on, and now Microsoft says, well, we'll give you some. You're going to pay for it. But right now, we don't even develop patches for that operating system anymore. Right, so the DoD goes, well, if you're not doing that, Microsoft, then all of our systems that have this, we're not going to credit them.
So we're not going to get. We say there's a risk now in every system here, and then that system, one of the 22,000 line items says there's a red dot and says we can't make this.
Yeah,
and the risk management framework goes through and says,
no, that's the thing I was going to get at.
Okay,
so within categorization, we start categorizing.
So that's just the categorization.
Yeah, this is just step one. So within the categorization process, we talked about being classified, unclassified, or not. Well, you don't automatically use the 2,500 controls on every single category. Let's just say it's unclassified. Mm-hmm. And within the categorization, there's CIA and
confidentiality,
integrity, and availability.
All right, so you have to determine.
That's how you categorize a system.
Okay.
And that's
based on data.
That's based on data, the type of data that the system. So what happens is if the system has classified data on it, automatically the confidentiality of that data is automatically moderate. So there's three ways you can categorize that data. It's low, moderate, or high. High being if it's catastrophic to any type of person or equipment. Catastrophic, right? Moderate being it's still serious. If something happens, it still causes major damage. A lot of people look at low as, we're good. No, low still means that there's a significant change in what you're doing and how you operate.
So is there one below that then?
No.
So everything still need to address.
Okay. That you have something to mean. So let's just say.
So the first step was find out all the risks. The second step is categorize them under low, medium, high, in terms of CIA, confidentiality,
right.
Integrity, availability.
Well, the first step would be to find out which type of data that you actually traverse across your system.
Okay.
Identify that data. You know, what type of data is important enough to categorize? You know, because let's just say there's data out there that's not really all that important, so you don't really want to track it, you know, within the CM process, but you still want to know it's out there. But if you want to categorize this data, and that all comes down to an RMF, what's called the system owner. It's all up to him. He goes, well, you know what? These are the data types I process within the system, and I want to protect them. And he gives us a list of that person that's processing, the cybersecurity engineer. He gives them a set of data and says, I want to protect this data. And you say, why? And you bring him in and you say, why would you want to protect this? And how about the confidentiality of that data? Let's just say it's wheels, or data X. So why is data X? What about the confidentiality? If this was compromised, like, would that be a low risk, a moderate risk, or a high risk? Right? And so he has to say, you know what? If I lost the confidentiality of that, it'd be pretty serious. It'd be catastrophic. People would die. Okay, high.
Okay.
Right?
So that's if somebody sees it that it's not supposed to.
Yes.
So usually confidentiality is when we put encryption on it.
Yep.
So scrambled, somebody sees nobody it that can shouldn't see have.
Okay, so then so the integrity, the next one will be integrity. How is the integrity on this data? Like, how important is it
that it
to be accurate? Right?
Exactly.
If it comes in,
it's the same now as it is next month, 2 years from now, or 5 years
ago. Or if it was compromised and you got the wrong data and you thought it was the right data.
So data came and you said, oh, this is about a thing in New Jersey, and really it's about a thing in California.
Yeah.
So that's integrity.
That
okay.
That's integrity, right?
And availability.
And then availability would be, what if you just can't get it at all? What if you don't get this? Tomorrow you try
so
to
Netflix
get the data.
Is down and you're not watching your movie tonight, right?
That's it.
And that's catastrophic, or is it media? Yeah.
What's most
the
people
medium
would probably say that's catastrophic.
Gotcha.
But that's the way you would start to categorize. Now, the thing I was trying to get to is that those 2,500 controls don't apply to every system. Let's just say it's an unclassified system.
Mm-hmm.
Then based on what you come up with, you would probably, since it's unclassified, number one, the confidentiality of that data is low. We're calling it low, right? So it'd be low. And then maybe the integrity of it could be low because we're not really concerned about this information based on what we say, and then low. So the categorization of this system is low, low, low.
Mm-hmm.
So based on a low, 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 we plug that into an algorithm, and it comes back with how many of those 2,500 controls we're going to use.
So it might only be 100 if it's low, low, low.
Probably the minimum I've ever seen was like 500 or so.
Man, can't we get down a little low?
Right.
So, but the thing here is this is done – how many systems are we talking about? Millions?
Yeah, many. Too many to count.
How many people are involved with doing... Is this something they've been
doing
for a while?
I'd have to say not enough.
Have they been doing this for a while? Is this something new the military's doing?
So accreditations have always been done, but not to the level that they're done now. So RMF, what it's done, because there was something broken within DICAP, and what was broken is scheduling and acquisition.
Like
right.
Getting people that need to do the 2,500 checkboxes?
Well, that's one thing, but let's just say within RMF, there's milestones. Milestone A, milestone B, milestone C. So within milestone A, we have development.
And that would be that this system has to be credited by this point, or?
Within the acquisition process, you have like a development system of the system, which is requires like a R&D.
Okay.
Right. And so now we get the developer involved in very, very early in the process of hardening systems. Mm-hmm. So it has to, before in the mind of development, it never was there in, within that milestone A.
So now it's in all the government contracts. If you're making something for the government, is it, and that's just started recently?
Yeah. Because that's why all these legacy systems didn't have that in the development phase. So, hence,
okay,
we're
so,
having some
so
challenges.
So, we have this big effort, all right? You have a bunch of systems already there. You have new systems coming in. Are we going to go back as far as the military and try and do everything that's in place right now? Or just focus on the new stuff coming down?
Oh, you got to go back. We're going back.
So, being involved with the NERC SIP and doing a lot of this for utility companies, that was a pretty big effort that still is not done with a lot of right. companies. Is there a, this has to be done by a certain year?
So every accreditation currently now, because every system has to be accredited, comes mm-hmm. with an expiration.
Okay.
Right. In order to keep your accreditation, you know, from expiring, well, under the DICAP, which was being phased out, you had an expiration. Now within RMF, there really is no true expiration. Within RMF, there's a step that has what we call continuous monitoring,
mm-hmm.
which is step six. And so within the continuous monitoring phase means that you don't necessarily expire, but you have to show a plan that how you're going to continuously monitor your system against cyber threat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's
and this is the
about.
Old ones in operation that might not be accredited?
Every single system.
Every single system.
So the old ones have to come undergo them. That's the challenge.
Okay. So we have a lot of people needed for this.
Right.
And that's when you talked about it to me first, I'm like, wow, there's going to be so many jobs here.
Yeah.
People need to be aware of this, that, hey, if this is something that I can working, or I'm looking for a job, or I'm looking to retool and get the skill, that this is an area I can start searching. It's going to be a big thing for the foreseeable future in government jobs.
So the government's really looking. We're not looking for people who are tenured in cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. We're looking for people who are eager to learn, who want to try something new, and who are looking to really change careers.
We've hired technical persons, is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, we've hired people in the last two or three months. We've probably hired four or five people who have absolutely zero cybersecurity experience.
Uh-huh. So what skill set are you looking for then when you bring them in?
We kind of like people who are quick learners, mm-hmm. right? People who learn, people who are really really good with taking data and looking at it and being very meticulous and not, you know, a low margin of error.
Okay.
Right? So when you're looking at, you know,
somebody that might like accounting or something where you're going through detailed items.
A lot of items, 2,500 items, you know, you're looking at, you're trying to map these things. You know, you don't want to have somebody that, you know, fish and wildlife, you know, somebody that wants to go out and check, you know, to see, you know, what's going on in the fish and wildlife area. You know, we want someone that can sit.
Somebody's detailed, gotcha.
Yeah, detail-oriented.
And is the biggest skill set you're looking for, like, clearance? Because that runs into the problem. I think we wanted to talk about this a little bit.
Well, you know what? I can only get down a rabbit hole, but now there's been new developments. I think that's changing.
Okay.
I think that because of the very system that's been compromised that handles clearances, I think that this is just my own personal opinion, that I think it's going to go more to a non-government run like clearance, almost like every single job that we get on a regular job, you're going to have to go through just a background check.
But if you don't have a clearance and you wanted to go work in this field in the government, what's the entry point?
So there's a huge question mark around it, like I said, because now all the investigations have kind of been suspended. Mm-hmm. But we've got this going on, the suspension of clearances and investigations, but then the need for the people to do the job is at an all-time high. Mm-hmm. And the people who are doing the job right now is at a very, very all-time low. So to know how this is going to play out, I have to anticipate that the requirements on this side are going to be a little different than what they've been traditionally, which was a clearance. So the entry point is just apply for a job. If there's cybersecurity jobs out there that are open, apply for it. Then once you get into the interview process, I have a really, really strong feeling that there's going to be some, I don't want to use the word compromise, but I think there's going to be some things that are going to be happening within the DoD that will allow people who don't currently have, you know, OPM background clearances to come in and do cybersecurity work. I just can't see another solution. I mean, because even if you started a background check today and they were doing it and it was open, it'd be a year to 2 years before we could put you to work. We need you to work now.
Yeah.
Right? The challenge is now.
I've talked about this on a lot of shows with a lot of people because we hear this screaming out, this imbalance right now in the need for people to work in cyber and cleared areas and the lack of clearances and the timeline it takes them is 2 years.
And quite frankly, some of the...
Anybody listening that's in this process, this needs to be streamlined. This is a screaming vulnerability.
Well, knowing you and knowing what I know about you, some of the smartest people I know in cyber don't have government clearances. Who do we need doing the work? Right?
But you just said this particular work is more of somebody that's detailed, you know, going through line items of work. So it's a big kind of almost a manual
correlation tasking. There is, but there's also concept of how we do things as well. We need high-level concept and ideas. I mean, we need the people who, you know, the practitioners, but then there's people who plan as well, you know, and there's big architecture. And we need people who have the big picture as well. That way we can actually get the right information to the practitioners so they know what to do. Right now, they're just kind of like, okay, well, you know, we're not sure what to do, but we're going to just follow these guidelines, right? And they follow those guidelines that are practically, you know, out. Some of them are a little dated.
Yeah. Well, Yeah, I think we could talk about this one all day, but I know you also work in acquisitions.
Right.
And don't talk about what programs or projects, but you get quite a bit of look at what the government's bringing in, what type of work. And I was really interested, I love that statement you said the other day, that in looking for companies to bring in on new contracts for people hiring, there's no such thing as an IT company anymore.
Oh, no.
If they don't come with cyber first,
you're not
going to bring them in.
I tell you what, not only that, if you're coming in to do that type of work, you want to come in doing cyber, not IT. You also want to be doing RMF. You also want to be trained on RMF because that's the way it's going. If you're still using the method of 110 controls, which was out, by the way, isn't going to be used since October 2015. Mm-hmm. So if that's all you have people trained on, then you don't even want to apply for the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You want to have your people trained within the acquisitions because that's what RMF is.
So knowing a little bit of inside scoop about what's needed to win a government contract in IT, cyber, mm-hmm. risk management, what advice would you give if somebody was listening that was from a company that is putting together proposals?
Okay, I would come in with unknown solutions, right? Every other company is coming out here that's saying, hey, we can help you. Well, that's great, but what can you do for us that these 10 other companies couldn't do?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What? Give us some solutions that we haven't already tried.
So they're really reaching out for the something different.
Absolutely.
So why is it? Are we finding the current business as usual is a failing model?
You know, I like to be optimistic, right? That's just my nature. But right now we're losing the cybersecurity battle nationwide.
I say that all the time, so I was prompting.
Oh, you said that too. Okay,
that was a prompting the witness.
I never
there.
Knew you said that, but yeah. But being a practitioner and being in management and knowing what I know now, and what's happening every day.
Uh-huh.
You know, we hear breaches every single day. Me myself, I've been a victim. Being a cybersecurity engineer, I've been a victim of identity theft, where somebody was in another state utilizing a form of payment from a debit card that was taken out of my account.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he had an ID. I don't know how far and how much he had, but he had a card with my name on it, and it wasn't mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was attempting to use it. Fortunately, there are triggers within, you know, the banking industry now that actually caught that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they stopped it and they contacted me, and we were able to defuse it.
But yeah, I think there's so many people have gone through that. And, you know, one bank I have like 4 card replacements in the last year. So sometimes I think they're going to run out of numbers on those credit cards, right? They're going to double the amount of digits on them. I mean, I could see that coming. That's just a fleeting thought. But kind of in closing here, is there anything you would like to get out or, you know, tell about either yourself, things you're looking for, organizations you know need support, things like that?
Okay, well, here I'm at Colorado Technical University. I think that, we have a challenge right now in cybersecurity, and throwing more dollars at it, which is what typically happens. I know I'm in the DOD. They throw dollars at challenges.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to throw dollars at something, throw it at education, right? I think that the more bang for your buck is educating and finding out more. And we've got right here at Colorado Tech, I mean, I'm not trying to do a shot, but I'm here now, not only as an instructor and a professor to teach it, but I'm really here to learn, mm-hmm. right? And really get really versed on what's going on in this industry by actually sharing as a professor. I'm learning more just by even these podcasts than I could have any other way outside of this community.
So stay connected with what's going on in the industry.
That's it.
Yeah. And so, we have to have a caveat that what we're saying is not the opinion of Colorado Technical University, and in no way are what we're talking about here responsibility or representative of the university.
Yeah, you have to do that disclosure, but I still stand by education being the number one, I think, challenge in the cybersecurity industry.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going out there, and I just talked about what I think companies should do, and they should have you know, solutions. And the only way you can really come up with new solutions if you're, you know, if you're learning more about what's going on and you're learning more about how what's possible in terms of cybersecurity.
Sounds like we need some new ideas and entrepreneurs as well.
Yeah,
so absolutely. We need to get some brains thinking about something outside of the box solutions for cybersecurity.
Yeah, there's somebody out there in their head that's just sitting there that's got solutions that are even listening to this podcast and they're thinking, man, you know, I didn't think my idea would be good or whatever, but that person needs to come forward, you know, and get, you know, onto, and you can probably give your information on your website, but they need to connect with us.
Contact New Cyber Frontier, Logic Central. Love to have you on the show. We have ideas about how cybersecurity can improve. That's what we're about. Awesome. But thanks for joining today.
You're welcome.
And
can't wait to do another one.
Yeah. Well, have a good day.
You too.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.